by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass makes heaven the middle of it. Grass makes heaven the middle. We are grass makes heaven.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got a lot going on this week. We're going to be covering the press conference that Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell had. But first, we're going to be playing an interview that Sidney Powell did with Lou Dobbs. And that's going to give us some very, very good insight. And then we'll get into the press conference. And then we'll end up with Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley questioning those big tech boys. But here we go with the interview, Lou Dobbs and Sidney Powell, just a fine, outstanding lady.
Joining us now by phone, Sidney Powell, a member of President Trump's legal team. She is also General Michael Flynn's attorney, former federal prosecutor, best-selling author, one of the country's most prominent appellate attorneys. Sidney, good to have you with us. Dominion voting system seems to be figuring larger and larger in the interest of your legal team. And what is the latest?
Oh, definitely, Lou. I've just gotten some stunning evidence from a firsthand witness, a high-ranking military officer who was present when Smartmatic was designed in a way that the and I'm going to just read you some of these statements, if you don't mind, so I get them exactly
sure.
Right from the affidavit. Designed in a way that the system could change the vote of each voter without being detected. He wanted the software itself to function in such a manner that if the voter were to place their thumbprint or fingerprint on a scanner, then the thumbprint would be tied to a record of the voter's name and identity as having voted, but that voter would not be tracked to the changed vote. He made it clear that the system would have to be set up but not leave any evidence of the changed vote for a specific voter, and that there would be no evidence to show and nothing to contradict that the name or the fingerprint or thumbprint was going with a changed vote. Smartmatic agreed to create such a system and produce the software and hardware that accomplished the result for President Chavez. After the Smartmatic electoral management system was put in place, he closely observed several elections where the results were manipulated using the Smartmatic software. One such election was December 2006 when Chavez was running against Rosales. Chavez won with a landslide over Rosales, a margin of nearly 6 million votes for Chavez versus 3.7 million for Rosales. In 2013, he witnessed another Venezuelan national election where the Smartmatic management system was used to manipulate and change the results for Chavez. And it goes on and on. He was in the control room where multiple digital display screens were shown for results and voting. The actual voting results were fed into that room and onto the displays over an internet feed, which was connected to a sophisticated computer system created by Smartmatic. People in that room were able to see in real time whether the vote that came through the electronic voting system was in their favor or against them. If one looked at any particular screen, they could determine that the vote from any specific area or as a national total was going to be against either candidate. Persons controlling the vote tabulation computer had the ability to change the reporting of votes by moving votes from one candidate to another by using the Smartmatic software.
And Smartmatic, the relation...
Smartmatic.
Smartmatic, the chairman is Admiral Pete Neffinger, who is also on the vice president's transition team, his presidential, presumptuous presidential transition team. That's an extraordinary situation as well, isn't it?
Yes, it is. So here's the other kicker. When the Smartmatic machines are, when somebody's losing, like, for example, when Maduro and his supporters realized the size of the other guy's lead, they were worried that they were in crisis mode and would lose the election. The Smartmatic machines used for voting in each state were connected to the Internet, reported their information over the Internet to the Caracas Control Center real time, so the decision was made to reset the entire system. Maduro's and his supporters ordered the network controllers to take the Internet itself offline in practically all parts in Venezuela to change the result. It took the voting operators approximately 2 hours to make the adjustments in the vote from Radonsky to Maduro. Then when they turned the Internet back on and the online reporting was up and running again, they checked each screen state by state to be certain they could see each vote was changed in favor of Maduro.
Sydney, you tweeted earlier today about CIA and its association. What have you discovered there?
Well, other than the fact there's no way all this was happening over around and around the world without the CIA knowing about it. I mean, that's just logic. This affidavit also explains it's been used to change election results all over the world. And it's all Venezuelan and Cuban and essentially communist money that's been doing this. It's a foreign-owned company, as you mentioned earlier. The president of it is Mr. Neffinger, who is on Biden's very presumptuous and immediately failing transition team. And people have been reporting this to our government for several years, including Democrats, and nobody's done a damn thing about it, Lou. I can't even express how furious I am over this.
Well, I share your fury and frustration, but I do have some news to break here at this moment. I have received word from a highly reliable source that the FBI does have an investigative team that is now looking into this election. Now, what that means beyond that, but at least it's confirmation that they are investigating, and we'll see what moves, because there had been no indication that indeed publicly that they were involved. They are now. To that point, I'd just like to show, if we could put up the full screen, under what their authorities are when we talk about these state-run elections, even though they're federal elections for at least a sizable number of the candidates. As you see there, the ballot includes one or more federal candidates, an election, a polling place, official abuses of their office, the conduct involving false voter registration, the crime intentionally targets minority-protected classes, the activity violates federal campaign finance laws, all of this laid out on the FBI website for anyone to look at. And it appears, Sydney, that at least the FBI has finally looked at that website. I'm not sure it was Christopher Wray, but someone at the FBI, and took action. Your thoughts?
Well, my other thought is that as soon as the Smartmatic system changed the votes that they wanted for their desired candidate, by the time they finish, they achieve a convincing but narrow victory of the certain number of votes they want for their candidate. This person saw, by what his own experience, exactly what was happening there was happening here.
It's it is a deeply, deeply troubling election. As I said earlier, the worst in this country's history, bar none. And we have seen official investigative and justice department officials slow to move, and it is infuriating to everyone.
Willful blindness. They have adopted a position of willful blindness to this massive corruption across the country. And the Smartmatic software is in the DNA of every vote tabulating company software and system.
Yes, and it is more than just a willful blindness. This is people trying to blind us to what is going on. We don't even know who the hell really owns these companies, at least most of them. That's got to change, and we've got to find out exactly what's going on. And thank God we've got a president who will stay in the fight all the way through until we get those answers. Sydney Powell, thanks so much. We appreciate it as always.
That's what Sidney Powell was saying, some very powerful things about this Dominion and the Smartmatic and so forth. And we just got to continue on. Next, that happened on Monday, Lou Dobbs' interview with Sidney Powell. And this was a few days later, there was a press conference. And I've got a clip on what Rudy had to say, just a short clip. I'm going to put the address on my website, thesecrettruth.com. You can come in there and watch the full press conference. It's about 91 minutes long. But anyway, I suggest and advise that you do that. But here we go with Rudy first, and then followed later, I'll comment on that about Sidney Powell's comments at the same press conference. So here we go with Rudy Giuliani. Here we go now.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much for coming. This is representative of our legal team. We're representing President Trump, and we're representing the Trump campaign. When I finish, Sidney Powell and then Jenna Ellis will follow me, and we will present, in brief, the evidence that we've collected over the last, I guess it is 2 weeks. Also, Joseph DeGeneva, Victoria Tenzing are here with me. There are a lot more lawyers working on this, but we're the senior lawyers, and Boris Epstein. So, I guess the best way to describe this is when we began our representation of the president, we certainly were confronted with a very anomalous set of results. The president way ahead on election night. 700,000 or 800,000 in Pennsylvania. Somehow he lost Pennsylvania. We have statisticians willing to testify that that's almost statistically impossible to have happened in the period of time that it happened. But, of course, that's just speculation. As we started investigating, both our investigations and the very patriotic and brave American citizens that have come forward are extraordinary. Extraordinary number of people. Extraordinary number of witnesses. And what emerged very quickly is there's not a singular voter fraud in one state. This pattern repeats itself in a number of states, almost exactly the same pattern, which to any experienced investigator, prosecutor, would suggest that there was a plan from a centralized place to execute these various acts of voter fraud, specifically focused on big cities, and specifically focused on, as you would imagine, big cities controlled by Democrats, and particularly focused on big cities that have a long history of corruption. The number of voter fraud cases in Philadelphia could fill a library. Just a few weeks ago, there was a conviction for voter fraud, and one 2 weeks before that. And I've often said, I guess sarcastically, but it's true, the only surprise I would have found in this is if Philadelphia hadn't cheated in this election, because for the last 60 years, they've cheated in just about every single election. You could say the same thing about Detroit. Each one of these cities are cities that are controlled by Democrats, which means they can get away with anything they want to do. It means they have certainly controlled the election board completely. And they control law enforcement, and unfortunately, they have some friendly judges that will issue ridiculously irrational opinions just to come out in their favor. So let's start with the specifics. Pennsylvania. In Pennsylvania, the margin of victory now for Biden, which is not a victory, it's a fraud, is 69,140 votes. The reality is that we are now at a count of 682,770 ballots for which we have affidavits that there was no inspection of that ballot at the time that it was entered in the vote. It was a mail ballot. Mail ballots are particularly prone to fraud. We were warned about that by Jimmy Carter, President Jimmy Carter, and Secretary Baker in a report about a dozen years ago, in which they said that mail balloting is particularly susceptible of fraud, that we should very carefully consider ever doing it, and that it can be taken advantage of. Justice Souter warned us of the same thing in a comment in an election law case. And even the New York Times wrote articles about how dangerous mail-in voting was. And this is the first time we ever did it en masse, and I think we proved that all three are prophets. It's not only susceptible to fraud, it is easily susceptible to fraud, particularly if you have a plan or scheme which sounds eerily similar to what Joe Biden told us a few days before the election, that he had the best voter fraud team in the world. Well, they were good. I don't know that they were that good because they made significant mistakes, like all crooks do, and we caught them. One of them was pushing out Republican inspectors. Every state, almost every civilized country, even Tanzania and places you wouldn't think of, have rules about inspectors, particularly for mail-in ballots. And why particularly for mail-in ballots? Because they can more easily be defrauded, and you can't check on it. People who have never done a mail-in ballot, I'm going to show you why it's so easy. Well, you fill out an envelope like this. You put your, usually in New York it would be your assembly district and the precinct in which you're voting. You fill out your name and your address, and you sign it. You then use an inner envelope, and you put the ballot inside the inner envelope. You seal it all, and you send it in. When it's being counted, almost invariably in the United States, up until the mass cheating that went on in this election, a Republican and a Democrat inspector, as well as others, if there are other parties, is allowed to watch the unsealing of this ballot. Used to go on all over America when we conducted honest elections. Because the only time you can ever find out if it's a fraudulent ballot is when it is looked at. The minute you approve this, it's thrown away, gone for eternity. The only thing left is the vote. That could have been Mickey Mouse. That could have been a dead person. That could have been not filled out properly. That could have been the same person 30 times. That could have been, and all these things have happened, by the way. That could have been nothing filled out. We'd never know. So, for example, the recount being done in Georgia will tell us nothing because these fraudulent ballots will just be counted again because they wouldn't supply the signatures to match the ballots. So it means nothing to have counted these ballots. Because, for example, in Pennsylvania, where we have probably our most precise evidence, 682,770 of these ballots were cast, put in, and they weren't inspected, which renders them ballots that are null and void, cannot be counted, have to be removed from the vote. Why? For several reasons, not the least of which is that was basically only one of two places in the state where it was done. So in the other parts of the state, there was a legitimate inspection of the ballots. So if you have two different standards in different parts of the state, one favoring one part of the state, the other disfavoring the other part of the state, that's a classic violation of the Equal Protection Clause of the United States Constitution, Bush v. Gore being the most recent case that teaches that. That's not the only fraud that went on in Pennsylvania. All of the other frauds carried out in the other states by the Democrat bosses happened there as well. For example, if you made a mistake in that ballot and you lived in Philadelphia or in Pittsburgh, you were allowed to fix the mistake. But if you lived in the what would be considered more Republican or Trump parts of the state, you were given no such right. One of our plaintiffs, Mr. Henry, cast an absentee ballot, and he failed to put it in the secure envelope inside. He just put it in open, naked. That ballot was cast aside because it was invalid, because that breaks the privacy of the vote. In Pittsburgh and in Philadelphia, if they noticed that there wasn't an inner envelope, they'd contact the voter and allow him to vote again. Or if he didn't fill it out completely, or if he made a mistake and didn't sign his full name, he was allowed to cure it. There is no such provision under the law of Pennsylvania. The Democrat Secretary of State made that up in order to maximize the votes in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and to minimize the votes in the other parts of the state. Clearly illegal, clearly voter fraud, easily provable, hundreds of witnesses, maybe thousands. We have, to give you another example, we have 17,000 provisional ballots cast in Pittsburgh. Do you know what a provisional ballot is? Provisional ballot usually happens this way, and about 15 of the 17,000 happen this way. You walk in and you say, I'm here to vote today. Oh, Mr. Giuliani, you already voted. I did? I don't remember voting. Oh, yes, yes, you cast an absentee ballot. No, I didn't. Yes, you did. No, I didn't. Yes, you did. So why does that happen 17,000 times in Pittsburgh? People walked in thinking they, actually 15,000 to be precise. Why did it happen 15,000 times that people in Pittsburgh walked in to vote and they had already voted according to the Democrat election machine? Did they forget? That many people with bad memories in Pittsburgh? Or is the following correct? That as witnesses will testify, they were instructed by the Democrat bosses, when they had a ballot in which there was no one registered, just assign it to somebody. Just assign it to Rudy Giuliani. So when Rudy Giuliani, maybe Rudy Giuliani won't show up to vote. And if he does show up to vote, we'll give him a provisional ballot. That is what we call circumstantial evidence of the fraud. The direct evidence of the fraud of the people who will testify that, in fact, that's what happened to them. As well as the 50 to 60 witnesses we have for the way they were treated and not allowed to inspect the ballots. They weren't just not allowed to do it. They were pushed. A few cases, they were assaulted. In all cases, they were put in a corral so far away, probably the closest they got is from here to the back of that room. We could do like a, did you all watch My Cousin Vinny? You know the movie? It's one of my favorite war movies because he comes from Brooklyn. And when the nice lady who said she saw, and then he says to her, how many fingers do I got up? And she says, three. Well, she was too far away to see it was only two. These people were further away than my cousin Vinny was from the witness. They couldn't see a thing. Now, I don't know. You're going to tell me that 60 people are lying? They didn't just tell me this. They swore under penalty of perjury, which is something no Democrats ever done. You don't even ask Biden about this. You don't put him under penalty of perjury. He doesn't even get asked questions about it. He doesn't get asked questions about all the evidence of the crimes that he committed. These people are under penalty of perjury. Their names are on an affidavit. They swear that they weren't allowed to carry out their function as inspectors. And it's not just a technical thing. There's a reason they did it. Why would you not allow people to carry out the function they've been allowed to do for 50 years, 60 years? Why wouldn't you allow inspections of those ballots? Because you knew you were going to use those ballots to catch Biden up. And you had a big road ahead of you. You had to catch him up for 700,000 to 800,000 votes that he was behind. And the only way you were going to do it was with the mail-in ballots. You couldn't have a Democrat and Republican inspector around. They didn't even have Democrats watching it, because they'd be afraid that there'd be honest Democrats who would say, you're cheating. So that takes us to Michigan, where there was an honest Democrat who said they were cheating. And we'll show you her affidavit, because I know you keep reporting falsely that we have no evidence, that we have no specific acts of fraud. That's because the coverage of this has been almost as dishonest as the scheme itself. The American people are entitled to know this. You don't have a right to keep it from them. You don't have a right to lie about it. And you are. I mean, you don't report to them that a citizen of this country, a very fine woman, who was willing to allow me to give you her name. I can't give you all these affidavits, because if I do, these people will be harassed. They'll be threatened. They may lose their job. They will lose their friends. We've lost lawyers in this case because they've been threatened. We've had lawyers that need protection. What's going on in this country is horrible, and the censorship that you're imposing is making it worse. But Jesse Jacob is an adult citizen and a resident of the state of Michigan. She's been an employee of the city of Detroit for decades. I know her age, but she can tell you her age. She was assigned to voting duties in September, and she was trained by the city of Detroit and the state of Michigan. She was basically trained to cheat. She said that I was instructed by my supervisor to adjust the mailing date of these absentee ballot packages to be dated earlier than when they were actually sent in. The supervisor made that announcement for all workers to engage in that fraudulent practice. That's not me saying that. That's this American citizen saying that under oath. I don't know. Maybe you could say she's lying. But you can't say there's no evidence. This is what we call evidence. This is direct evidence. Not circumstantial. I tried many, many cases, as did all my colleagues here. You put a witness on a witness stand, witnesses testifying to their own knowledge. This witness goes on the witness stand and she will say, I was told to adjust the date on the absentee ballots. I witnessed election workers and employees going over to the voting booths with voters in order to watch them vote and coach them for whom to vote. Completely illegal. She will testify to that. I don't know. Biden's people can cross-examine her, but you can't just throw it away. Gee, there's no evidence. Next time you say that, you'll be lying. Because there is evidence. This is public. You can all get it. It's attached to the complaint in Costantino versus the city of Detroit. Then she was instructed by my supervisor not to ask for a driver's license or any photo ID when a person was trying to vote. Don't ask for identification. Why would you not ask for identification? Because you knew that a lot of people not entitled to vote were going to come in and early vote. Because you knew that illegal immigrants were going to be allowed to vote. You knew, if you lived in Philadelphia, unless you're stonard, that's an Italian expression for stupid, unless you're stupid, you knew that a lot of people were coming over from Camden to vote. They do every year. Happens all the time in Philly. It's about as frequent as getting beaten up at a Philadelphia Eagle football game. Happens all the time. All the time. And is allowed to happen because it is a Democrat, corrupt city.
The press keeps asking that the investigators, where's your evidence, where's your evidence? Well, Rudy Giuliani did give some evidence today, but the press has not been honest. The media, you could say the mainstream media, has not been honest throughout this election. And they started attacking Trump way back. Now, coming up next is Sidney Powell, and she elaborates a little bit more about this software that was used to, in their opinion, to defraud the election. Here we go now with her.
Now I'm going to ask Sidney Powell to describe to you what we can describe about another totally outrageous situation I don't think most Americans know that our ballots get calculated, many of them, outside the United States and are completely open to hacking, completely open to change, and it's being done by a company that specializes in voter fraud. I'll let Sydney describe that to you.
Thank you, Rudy. What we are really dealing with here and uncovering more by the day is the massive influence of communist money through Venezuela, Cuba, and likely China in the interference with our elections here in the United States. The Dominion voting systems, the Smartmatic technology software, and the software that goes in other computerized voting systems here as well, not just Dominion, were created in Venezuela at the direction of Hugo Chavez to make sure he never lost an election after one constitutional referendum came out the way he did not want it to come out. We have one very strong witness who has explained how it all works. His affidavit is attached to the pleadings of Lynn Wood in the lawsuit he filed in Georgia. It is a stunning, detailed affidavit because he was with Hugo Chavez while he was being briefed on how it worked. He was with Hugo Chavez when he saw it operate to make sure the election came out his way. That was the express purpose for creating this software. He has seen it operate, and as soon as he saw the multiple states shut down the voting on the night of the election, he knew the same thing was happening here, that was what had gone on. Now, the software itself was created with so many variables and so many back doors that can be hooked up to the Internet or a thumb drive stuck in it or whatever, but one of its most characteristic features is its ability to flip votes. It can set and run an algorithm that probably ran all over the country to take a certain percentage of votes from President Trump and flip them to President Biden, which we might never have uncovered had the votes for President Trump not been so overwhelming in so many of these states that it broke the algorithm that had been plugged into the system. And that's what caused them to have to shut down in the states they shut down in. That's when they came in the back door with all the mail-in ballots, many of which they had actually fabricated. Some were on pristine paper with identically matching perfect circle dots for Mr. Biden. Others were shoved in batches. They're always put in a certain number of batches, and people would rerun the same batch. This corresponds to our statistical evidence that shows incredible spikes in the vote counts at particular times, and that corresponds to eyewitness testimony of numerous people who have come forward and said they saw the ballots come in the back door at that time. Notably, the Dominion executives are nowhere to be found now. They are moving their offices overnight to different places. Their office in Toronto was shared with one of the Soros entities. One of the leaders of the Dominion project in overall is Lord Malik Brown, Mr. Soros' number two person in the UK and part of his organization. There are ties of the Dominion leadership to the Clinton Foundation and to other known politicians in this country. Just to give you a brief description of how this worked, I'm going to quote from a letter that was written, and I will read that to make sure I get the quotes right. This person was objecting to the United States acquisition of Sequoia voting systems by Smartmatic, a foreign-owned company. I believe this transaction raises exactly the sort of foreign ownership issues that CFIUS is best positioned to examine for national security purposes. It's undisputed that Smartmatic is foreign-owned and it has acquired Sequoia. They keep changing the names as they go along. Different times when a problem comes up, they just create another corporation and call it a different name. but it was a voting machine company doing business in the United States. Sequoia voting machines were used to record over 125 million votes during the 2004 presidential election in the United States. Smartmatic now acknowledges that Antonio Mujica, a Venezuelan businessman, has controlling interest in Smartmatic, but the company has not revealed who all the Smartmatic owners are. According to the press, Smartmatic's owners are hidden through a web of offshore private entities, and that is, in fact, true. Smartmatic has been associated with the Venezuelan government led by Hugo Chavez, which is openly hostile to the United States, and, of course, as we all know, communistic and really brutalizing its own people. The system has been continued there by Mr. Maduro and ensured his election. Smartmatic's possible connection to the Venezuelan government poses a potential national security concern in the context of its acquisition of Sequoia, because electronic voting machines are susceptible to tampering, and insiders are in the best position to engage in such tampering. This letter expresses concern of the Chicago 2006 primary election. And it ends by saying the products and services that are of Venezuelan origin, and evaluate Smartmatic's ownership to determine who could have influence and control over these and other Sequoia products and services, are important to the national security of the United States. This letter was written to Hank Paulson on October 6, 2006, by Congresswoman Carolyn B. Maloney. Senators Klobuchar and Warren have raised these concerns as recently as December 2019. Why our government has not taken them seriously is beyond my comprehension, unless they have, some of the three-letter agencies have used them themselves in other parts of the world. We know that the technology was exported to affect an election in Argentina. That's admitted by our friend who wrote the affidavit about Hugo Chavez and his interest in Smartmatic. Again, in 2006, Carolyn Maloney wrote the Honorable John Snow, the Secretary of the Treasury, about the issues. Speaking of Smartmatic's leadership, one of the Smartmatic patent holders, Eric Coomer, I believe his name is on the web as being recorded in a conversation with Antifa members, saying that he had the election rigged for Mr. Biden, nothing to worry about here, and they were going to F Trump. His social media is filled with hatred for the president and for the United States of America as a whole, as are the social media accounts of many other Smartmatic people. There has been widespread use of this. Dominion itself is utilized in 2,000 jurisdictions in 30 states. It has been uncertifiable in multiple states who realized all the problems that it had, including Texas. Experts have described it across the board, from a Princeton group of three professors to experts that we have talked to about its end-user vulnerabilities. People can admittedly go in and change whatever they want. They can set the ratio of votes from one thing to another. They can say that a Biden vote counts as 1.25 and a Trump vote counts as 0.75. And those may be the numbers that were actually used here. It's not just the swing states that were affected. The algorithm was likely run across the country to affect the entire election. Like I said, we only discovered it this year because of the overwhelming number of votes for President Trump in the swing states that caused the machines to have to shut down for them to backfill for adding votes. We have evidence of different numbers of votes being injected into the system, the same identical, unique six-digit number multiple times in at least two states that we've analyzed so far, and I'm talking about like 341,542 votes for Biden and 100,012 for Trump. There's no explanation, no logical explanation for the same numbers being injected 20 minutes apart into the machine. The software manual itself, you can download it from the internet, and I would encourage you all to read it because it specifically advertises some of these things as features of the system. Why it was ever allowed into this country is beyond my comprehension, and why nobody has dealt with it is absolutely appalling. The machines were easily accessible to hackers. There's a video on the net that it will explain to you how a kid with a cell phone can hack one of these voting machines. There's been no oversight of Dominion or its software. Workers in each county were trained by Dominion, but there's no evidence of any monitoring otherwise. We have testimony of different workers admitting that they were trained how to dispose of Trump votes and add to Biden votes. The software has a feature pursuant to which you can drag and drop any number of batches of votes to the candidate of your choice or simply throw them away. So we have mathematical evidence in a number of states of massive quantities of Trump votes being trashed, just simply put in the trash like you would on your computer with any file, and Biden votes being injected. That's addition to the flipping. I mean, it really happens in two ways. There's an algorithm that runs that automatically flips all the votes, and then each operator has the ability to go in, override settings, they can ignore a signature, they can ignore the top line of the ballot, they can go down ballot and select who they want to change the results for. The gentleman who founded Smartmatic, there's video of him on the internet explaining that, yes, in at least one occasion he admits they changed a million votes with no problem. Many of the jurisdictions that have had this problem might not have known of the issues, but many did. And I think a full-scale criminal investigation needs to be undertaken immediately by the Department of Justice and by every state's equivalent, Attorney General's Office or State Investigatory Unit, because there is evidence of different benefits being provided to the people who spent $100 million of taxpayer money at the last minute for their state to get the Dominion voting systems put in time for this election in different ways. There's one person that a lawyer told me got, quote, election insurance, meaning that he would be able to make sure he was elected. I'm sure they explained that feature in detail to many people who expressed interest in putting this voting system in. Texas denied certification of the Dominion system in 2019, but there are no doubt issues with the software that Texas did use, unbeknownst to Texas, I would imagine, since they went to great trouble to examine the Dominion systems and reject them. But other software, the source code that does the alterations is embedded, we have been told, in the source code all across the country in all the voting machines. There's no doubt it has been used to alter elections in other countries. We know specifically that Venezuela exported it for that purpose to Argentina and other Latin American companies to make sure that the corrupt rulers who were willing to pay the highest price for being in office were allowed to rig their elections. This is stunning, heartbreaking, infuriating, and the most unpatriotic acts I can even imagine for people in this country to have participated in any way, shape, or form. And I want the American public to know right now that we will not be intimidated. American patriots are fed up with the corruption from the local level to the highest level of our government, and we are going to take this country back. We are not going to be intimidated. We are not going to back down. We are going to clean this mess up now. President Trump won by a landslide. We are going to prove it, and we are going to reclaim the United States of America for the people who vote for freedom.
We're getting very serious about this now, and you can tell by the tenor of their voices the seriousness of our situation. Next, we have Josh Hawley, senator from Missouri. He's questioning Facebook head, and boy, does he lay it on him, and he reveals Sentra and Task, which are two programs inside of Facebook that are used to track American citizens. So here we go next with this Josh Hawley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the late 19th century, the heads of the biggest corporations in America, the robber barons, got together and they set rates, they set prices, they determined how they would control information flow, they determined how they get rid of competition, and I'll be darned if we aren't right back there again. except for this time, you're the robber barons. Your companies are the most powerful companies in the world, and I want to talk about how you're coordinating together to control information. In recent days, my office was contacted by a Facebook whistleblower, a former employee of the company with direct knowledge of the company's content moderation practices, and I want to start by talking about an internal platform called Tasks that Facebook uses to coordinate projects, including censorship. The Tasks platform allows Facebook employees to communicate about projects they're working on together. That includes Facebook censorship teams, including the so-called community well-being team, the integrity team, and the hate speech engineering team, who all use the Tasks platform to discuss which individuals or hashtags or websites to ban. Now, Mr. Zuckerberg, you're familiar with the Tasks platform, aren't you?
Senator, we use the task system for, I think it's, as you say, for people coordinating all kinds of work across the company, although I'm not sure if I'd agree with the characterization specifically around content moderation that you gave.
Well, let's get into that, and let me see if we can refresh your memory and provide folks at home watching with an example. Here over my shoulder is an example, it's a screenshot of the task platform in use. You'll notice if the cameras zoom in, several references to election integrity throughout on these lists of tasks. Again, this is shared across Facebook sites, company locations, by working groups. What particularly intrigued me is that the platform reflects censorship input from Google and Twitter as well. So Facebook, as I understand it, Facebook censorship teams communicate with their counterparts at Twitter and Google and then enter those companies' suggestions for censorship onto the task platform so that Facebook can then follow up with them and effectively coordinate their censorship efforts. So Mr. Zuckerberg, let me just ask you directly, under oath now, does Facebook coordinate its content moderation policies or efforts in any way with Google or Twitter?
Senator, let me be clear about this. We do coordinate on and share signals on security-related topics. So, for example, if there is signal around a terrorist attack or around child exploitation imagery or around a foreign government creating an influence operation, that is an area where the companies do share signals about what they see. But I think it's important to be very clear that that is distinct from the content moderation policies that we or the other companies have, where once we share intelligence or signals between the companies, each company makes its own assessment of the right way to address and deal with that information.
Well, I'm talking about content moderation. I'm talking about individuals, websites, hashtags, phrases to ban. Is it your testimony that you do not communicate with Twitter or Google about content moderation, about individuals, websites, phrases, hashtags to ban? Just yes or no. Do you communicate with Twitter or Google about coordinating your policies in this way?
Senator, we do not coordinate our policies.
Do your Facebook content moderation teams communicate with their counterparts at Twitter or Google?
Senator, I'm not aware of anything specific, but I think it would be probably pretty normal for people to talk to their peers and colleagues in the industry.
It would be normal, but you don't do it?
No, I'm saying that I'm not aware of any particular conversation, but I would expect that some level of communication probably happens.
Ah,
but that is different from coordinating what our policies are or our responses in specific instances.
Well, fortunately, I understand that the task platform is searchable. So will you provide a list of every mention of Google or Twitter from the tasks platform to this committee?
Senator, that's something that I can follow up with you and your team after on.
Well, yes or no, I'm sure you can follow up with the list, but why don't you commit while I've got you here under oath? It's so much better to do this under oath. Will you commit now to providing a list from the tasks platform of every mention of Google or Twitter?
Senator, respectfully, I'm without having looked into this, I'm not aware of any sensitivity that might exist around that, so I don't think it would be wise for me to commit to that right now, but
so
I would be happy to follow.
How many items on the TASP platform reflect that Facebook, Twitter, and Google are sharing information about websites or hashtags or platforms that they want to suppress?
Senator, I do not know.
Will you provide a list of every website and hashtag that Facebook content moderation teams have discussed banning on the TASP platform?
Senator, again, I would be happy to follow up with you or your team to discuss further how we might move forward on that. But without
will you commit to it here? Senator Cruz and Senator Lee both asked you for lists of individuals, websites, entities that have been subject to content moderation. You expressed doubt about whether any such information exists, but you've also now said that the TASP website, you've acknowledged the TASP platform exists, that it is searchable. So will you commit to providing the information you have logged on the TASP website about content moderation that your company has undertaken? Yes or no?
Senator, I think it would be better to follow up once I've had a chance to discuss with my team what any sensitivity around that would be that might prevent the kind of sharing that you're talking about. But once I've done that, I would be happy to follow up.
All right. So you won't commit to do it here. We could, of course, subpoena this information, but I'd much rather get it from you voluntarily. But I think let everybody take note that Mr. Zuckerberg has now repeatedly refused to provide information that he knows that he has and has now acknowledged that he has, that TASP has under oath. Let me switch to a different topic. Mr. Zuckerberg, tell me about Sentra. What is the Facebook internal tool called Sentra?
Senator, I'm not aware of any tool with that name.
Well, Matt, let me see if this refreshes your memory. There's a demonstrative now over my shoulder. Sentra is a tool that Facebook uses to track its users, not just on Facebook, but across the entire Internet. Sentra tracks different profiles that a user visits, their message recipients, their linked accounts, the pages they visit around the web that have Facebook buttons. Sentra also uses behavioral data to monitor users' accounts, even if those accounts are registered under a different name. And you can see a shot here, a screenshot provided to us of the Sentra platform. We blocked out the user's name in the interest of privacy, although you can see this individual's birth date and age, when they first started using Facebook, their last login, as well as all manner of trackings. How many different devices have they used to access Facebook? How many different accounts are associated with their name? What accounts have they visited? What photos have they tagged? And on and on and on. Mr. Zuckerberg, how many accounts in the United States have been subject to review and shut down through Sentra?
Senator, I do not know because I'm not actually familiar with the name of that tool. I'm sure that we have tools that help us with our platform and community integrity work. But I am not familiar with that name.
Do you have a tool that does exactly what I've described and that you can see here over my shoulder? Or are you saying that doesn't exist?
Senator, I'm saying that I'm not familiar with it and that I'd be happy to follow up and get you and your team the information that you would like on this. But I'm limited in what I'm familiar with and can share today.
It's always amazing to me, Mr. Chairman, how many people before this committee suddenly develop amnesia. Maybe it is something about the air in the room. Let me ask you this. When a Facebook employee accesses a user's private information, like their private messages or their personally identifiable data, is a record made of that, Mr. Zuckerberg?
Sorry, Senator, could you repeat that?
Is a record made of any time a Facebook employee accesses a user's private information, personally identifiable information, for example, messages? Is a record made any time a Facebook employee does that?
Senator, I believe so.
Does it trigger an audit?
Senator, I think sometimes it may.
How many audits have been conducted?
Senator, I do not know the exact number of
audits. Can you give me a list?
Senator, we can follow up on that to see what would be useful here.
Will you? I'm almost finished, Mr. Chairman. Will you commit to giving us a list of the number of times Facebook employees have accessed users' personal account information without their knowledge? Yes or no?
Senator, we should follow up on what would be useful here. It is, of course, in the operations of the company, if someone reports something, sometimes necessary for people at the company to go review and understand the context around what is happening when someone reports something. So this is fairly frequent, and is a matter of course. We do have security systems that can detect anomalous patterns to flag, but we should follow up in more detail on what you're interested in.
Mr. Chairman, I'll just say in closing that what we have here is clear evidence of coordination between Twitter, Google, and Facebook. Mr. Zuckerberg knows he has the tools to track this, but he either doesn't remember or won't commit to letting us see it. We have evidence of Facebook tracking its own users all across the web. Mr. Zuckerberg won't answer questions about it, can't remember the name, isn't sure if the tool is deployed in this way, and won't commit to giving us basic information. I submit to you that this is both totally unacceptable and totally predictable, because it is exactly what these tech companies have done to the American people and to Congress for years now, which is why it is time we took action against these modern-day robber barons. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
That concludes our first hour, and all I could say is that we're in a very dangerous state of affairs here in this country. We've had some of the globalists, some of the top-level people, the money power people, you could say, that have tried to transform America into a Marxist communist state for the lower classes. And they're operating from the very top level of the, say, the pyramidal power system. And it's becoming that they're revealing themselves with public-private partnerships and so forth and so on to be operating through a monopolistic capitalism, crony capitalism, or some would describe as corporate fascism. And this is what it's beginning to appear to be. And all of this cheating and going on is just, it's outlandish that this would occur. There's been cheating in the past. It's just that they never were caught on this level. And the scope of this is so far-ranging that it's unprecedented in the scope of the cheating that was carried out. And here are some things that are concerning to myself and my other friends that I talk to, you know, about politics and so forth, power structures, is that if this got into the hands of the CIA, and it probably did, then the CIA probably used it to throw elections and to fix elections throughout the world. Now, how many countries suffered at the hands of our CIA or, you know, through the use of this, the inappropriate use, say, of this program to put back in dictators or people that the public in those countries never voted for? And also, how many other races in this country during this election were thrown over to people that it shouldn't have been thrown to? So maybe the senatorial race, in fact, Sidney Powell insinuated this, and she stated this, that maybe Collins, okay, in Georgia, he was a runner for one of the senatorial races. Maybe he was cheated out of the race. And that threw it into a runoff that we're experiencing now of both senators in Georgia that are prone now to a runoff. So maybe Collins actually won that one senatorial race. They didn't want him there. He was a hardliner on the right and helped reveal all this spygate against President Trump. Very, very good person, stand-up person, and so forth. Anyway, I want to thank everyone out there for listening to this, and we're just going to keep plugging away trying to get to the truth. Thank you for listening. God bless each and every one of you. Good night.